This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is Thursday, October 31st. So the House this morning voted on rules for moving the impeachment inquiry forward into a public hearings phase. That'll take place in the Intelligence Committee. Then they'll kick it over to the Judiciary Committee, which would vote on actual articles of impeachment, if any. This morning's vote was almost 100% along party lines. Only two Democrats voted no on these rules, and zero Republicans voted yes. We'll play a few highlights from the floor debate and have a conversation now with someone who was there when the House Judiciary Committee did vote for articles of impeachment against President Richard Nixon in July of 1974. Elizabeth Holtzman was a Democratic member of Congress from Brooklyn at that time and a Judiciary Committee member. She also released a book last year called The Case for Impeaching Trump. Liz, we really appreciate this. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
This vote was along party lines, but brushing up on my history this morning, I see the House authorized a Nixon impeachment inquiry in February 1974 by a vote of 410-4. Can you compare and contrast?
Well, yeah, it's kind of a sad commentary as I see it, but in a way it's not 100% surprising. When the House voted to give House Judiciary Committee authority to proceed, first of all, we'd commenced our proceeding before, but there had also been hearings, public hearings, before the Senate Watergate Committee, which had revealed really serious problems with President Nixon and his abuse of power. Then we had the firing of the special prosecutor. So the American people called for Congress to do something, and they were very disturbed about the president's actions, and there was a lot that had come out in the public record in terms of the president's misconduct, and there were live witnesses. That hasn't happened yet, and so it's surprising that the public is as much in favor of impeachment as it is based on the lack of enough public record in terms of live witnesses. But it was basically an overwhelmingly bipartisan vote because the Republicans in Congress saw and the American people saw that an inquiry was important and they wanted to proceed. I think now what's happened is that the president has fought very hard to keep the party in line, and the party is falling in line as opposed to having people think for themselves and say what's good for the country.
But by the time you got to the Judiciary Committee vote on actual articles of impeachment in July of 1974, the vote was 27-11, meaning most Republicans on the committee, even if they voted yes to launch the inquiry, voted against the articles of impeachment. So what changed from February to July 1974?
Well, there were different votes. In February, the vote was, should there be an impeachment inquiry? Should we try to find the facts? Should we try to establish whether the president engaged in impeachable conduct? And that was overwhelmingly positive. People said, yes, we have nothing to be afraid of in looking for the facts. And then, by the time the impeachment vote came, the majority of Republicans determined that the facts didn't support the impeachment effort. However, within weeks, the Supreme Court ordered that certain tapes be disclosed. There was a smoking gun tape that showed beyond any question that the president personally orchestrated the cover-up, and every single Republican holdout announced that he was going to vote for impeachment. So that's what troubles me so much about this vote. This is not a vote as to whether there are grounds for impeachment. This is a vote to find the facts. And the fact that the Republicans don't even want to find the facts is very troubling. I think the American people want to find the facts. And why are people afraid of the truth?
So let me play a few clips from the floor debate that I think, in a nutshell, are the process debate that the two parties were having before the vote this morning, which would be, I guess, the Republicans' answer to the question you just asked, Liz. And I guess we're likely to be hearing some of these same points as a main Republican line of defense or line of offense as the content hearings go forward. First, here's the ranking Republican on the Rules Committee, Tom Cole of Oklahoma, one of the first to speak this morning.
Today's resolution fails to give the minority the same rights as were present during the Clinton impeachment, and it fails to offer the same due process protections that were given to Presidents Nixon and Clinton.
Republican Congressman Tom Cole, who was followed immediately by the Democratic chair of the Rules Committee, James McGovern of Massachusetts.
This resolution provides better protections for the president than what Presidents Nixon and Clinton received. And just like under Nixon and Clinton, the president and his counsel can attend all hearings and raise objections. They can question any witness. This going beyond Nixon and Clinton, this resolution allows the president's counsel to ask questions at the presentation of evidence. Under our procedures, the ranking minority members of the Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committee may issue subpoenas if authorized by the committee by a committee vote. These are the same subpoena powers that the ranking minority member was given during Clinton and Nixon. Our resolution allows for greater member participation than under past impeachment procedures, including a robust process for the minority to propose witnesses and even issue subpoenas.
Democrat James McGovern. Florida Republican Debbie Lesko spoke in the floor debate to list specific amendments that she offered last night to this resolution, all of which were rejected.
I had an amendment to ensure minority witnesses could call an equal number of witnesses as the majority. Democrats said no. I had an amendment to require the Intel chairman to turn over exculpatory materials to the Judiciary Committee. Democrats shot it down. I had an amendment to give ranking members of the same authority as chairman to submit materials to the Judiciary Committee. Democrats rejected that too. The process set forth by this resolution violates basic standards of fairness.
Republican Debbie Lesko. A while later, Speaker Nancy Pelosi countered that with specific due process rights that the process will include.
This resolution ensures transparency, advancing public disclosure of deposition transcripts, and outlining the procedures for the transfer of evidence to the Judiciary Committee to use in its proceedings. It enables effective public hearings, setting out procedures for the questioning of witnesses and continuing the precedent of giving the minority the same rights in questioning witnesses as the majority, which has been true at every step of this inquiry, despite what you might hear fulminating there. It provides the president and his counsel opportunities to participate, including presenting his case, submitting requests for testimony, attending hearings, raising objections to testimony given, cross-examining witnesses, and more. And contrary to what you may have heard today, we give more opportunity to his case than was given to other presidents before.
Speaker Pelosi. So there's a smattering of clips from the floor debate on the rules. Liz, as you heard, the central question there was how the rules they voted on today compare to the due process offered to Nixon and Clinton. How would you compare the due process that Nixon had in the impeachment hearings you were in to the rules set forth now for President Trump?
Well, the rules are pretty much the same, and nobody ever objected to the fairness of the Judiciary Committee process. It was basically fair. And this process is similarly fair. The idea that you would have the same number of witnesses for both sides, I mean, that's ludicrous.
Why?
You know, it's ludicrous because there may not be enough witnesses who have something substantive to say. You don't want to fill up hearings with people who have no evidence whatsoever.
But do they
So the idea that it's going to be equal, we never had such a provision, and it's a nonsensical provision.
They have the right to call as many witnesses as the Democrats?
They can call more witnesses than the Democrats. But the point is that the Democrats have the right, as they had during the Nixon proceeding, to say no to a subpoena.
One of the rules that the Republicans were objecting to this morning is that Republicans on the committee could only subpoena witnesses with the consent of the Democrats, or at least enough Democrats for a committee majority vote. We won, so we can set the rules even if they're not fair?
I don't think that's definitely not the case. It's not that they're not fair. First of all, this is what we did during the Nixon impeachment. The minority had full subpoena powers for documents and for witnesses, but those subpoena powers were subject to disapproval by the committee, a whole committee vote. That was how it proceeded. Nobody said it was unfair. Nobody said, oh, my God, this is terrible. And I want you to know something. In practice, what happened, which is really important as well, in practice, what happened was that the Republicans did want to call witnesses, But they wanted to call key witnesses because they wanted to see their own testimony. They wanted to see John Dean, the president's counsel. They wanted to see other people of that ilk. They were not calling people to disrupt the proceedings. They were calling witnesses because they wanted to test their veracity and their sincerity. And the chair, it wasn't even a committee vote, the chair agreed, Peter Rubino agreed, so the Republicans got their witnesses. Why does everybody think that this is not going to be done in a fair manner? Because if they get up there, and I think that's a really important point, in practice, the system worked in an extremely fair way, and nobody criticized Peter Rodino or the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee for refusing valid, legitimate evidence to be brought forward. That did not happen, and it's not going to happen here either because the American people won't stand for it. That, yeah, if you can scream and yell, as some of these people will, and say, oh, well, you have to hear this nut-wing lunatic who's got some extreme theories, yes, of course, you're not going to disrupt a proceeding with that. But any legitimate witness with actual knowledge of the facts, it'd be pretty hard for the Democrats to refuse to hear somebody like that, and they're going to put those people on.
Let me take one more of the Republicans' objections for now. There was such a long list that we heard in those clips. We can't take them all up today, but the president will be able to have an attorney present to question or cross-examine witnesses when they get to the Judiciary Committee, but that right is conditional. The resolution says if the president refuses to cooperate in certain ways with congressional requests, then, quote, the chair shall have the discretion to impose appropriate remedies, including by denying specific requests by the president or his counsel, unquote. So the Republicans are saying the president won't necessarily have the right to legal counsel, that's going to be at the discretion of the Democratic chair, and he should have the right to cross-examine witnesses no matter what.
Well, I think the way that provision is going to work in practice, as opposed to all the horribles that are being suggested about it, is that the president has instructed various witnesses not to produce documents and testimony. So I don't think they're going to interfere. I don't think the chair of the Judiciary Committee will interfere with the president's cross-examination rights or with the president's questioning of witnesses. But the chair might interfere with the president's desire to bring testimony forward or to bring witnesses forward if he is going to disrupt and obstruct the evidence that the committee wants from him and his administration. So I don't think that's necessarily unfair. We have to see how that's going to work in practice. That was not a provision that we had in the Nixon impeachment process. But I think given what's happened here and the stonewalling, it's not just a refusal to give one document or 10 documents. It's a refusal that the president has said to cooperate in any way, shape, or form with this investigation. And that's a defiance of the Constitution because the Constitution creates the power of impeachment, whether they like it or not. It's in the Constitution, and it should be respected. They're not respecting it. So how it'll work out in practice, I don't know.
Liz, the president's Watergate crimes became known in significant part because there was an anonymous leaker known as Deep Throat who was telling journalists about some of the incriminating secrets that the White House was keeping. In this case, we now have so many public whistleblowers who were top Trump appointees, foreign policy officials, Fiona Hill, Colonel Vindman, Ambassador Taylor, Tim Morrison testifying today, and others. Did you have anything like this internal level of concern from within the White House and willing to express it in those days?
Well, John Dean came forward, but we also had notes, for example, significant notes that were taken by Bob Haldeman, Nixon's top aide, chief of staff, and Haldeman was probably the best note taker in the world. And he had extremely comprehensive, accurate notes, which also helped to guide us about what was happening. What was interesting about the Nixon administration is that there were people in the administration who stood up against illegal and unlawful acts of the president at the time. It wasn't just a matter of coming forward later on and saying, oh, this was bad, I saw it happen. But think about the enemies list. which was a list of people that were contributors to Nixon's main opponent and were opponents of the Vietnam War. And Nixon ordered IRS to do audits of those people. And the IRS said no. And the Secretary of Treasury said no. That's one thing that we're not really seeing in this administration, which is stopping the illegal conduct of the president. People don't seem to have done that. They may come forward now, but they weren't stopping it at the time. We did see that with regard to the enemies list.
Before we wrap up, it's reported that the president wants Republicans to defend him not just by complaining about the process, but by saying what he did with Ukraine was okay. Most Republicans are trying to stay away from that claim so far and focus on the process disputes that we've been discussing today. Liz, do you expect that to change? And what do you think would happen if they started to do that more?
Well, I think they have a problem because their constituents are going to hear the facts. And so if they come out and say it's okay, I mean, that might persuade some of their constituents. But a lot of Americans understand that foreign governments have no business sticking their hands into our election process. They understand that, and they understand the president shouldn't be doing that. So I think it puts them in a tough spot. And that's why I think the public hearings are going to be really important, because we're going to get away from the process issues and focus on the facts of what happened here.
So final thing, Liz, as I was reading some old Watergate press clips, it seems that many Democrats were very grave in their tone, including prominently Peter Rodino, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee at that time, who you mentioned before. When the committee voted for articles of impeachment, there was a lot of, I hate doing this, this is a tragedy for the country, but unfortunately it's necessary. Was there any more or less glee in bringing down Nixon than you see today among the Democrats with respect to Trump? And would you counsel them, with the view of history that you have, to maintain any tone that they either are or aren't maintaining?
Well, I think the critical thing is that, I mean, we didn't, during the Nixon impeachment, show any glee about having to vote for his impeachment. In fact, the story is that Peter Rodino, the chair of the committee, after the first vote on the articles of impeachment, went back to his office and cried. Nobody wanted to see, I think, our president impeached for engaging in abuses of power. We didn't want to see that, no matter what our disagreement was with the president. And I would counsel, with all due respect, the Democrats on the House of Representatives and the Republicans as well, to conduct themselves with dignity in accordance with the gravity and seriousness of the proceedings. After all, this does undo an election. This is the removal of a president, but it was a power granted by the framers of the Constitution, who feared presidents who wouldn't obey the law and who engage in abuses of power. But I think they need to present themselves as serious, as fair-minded, as open-minded, and as deliberate. And I think that will go far in getting the American people to support their decisions.
Elizabeth Holtzman, who is a Democratic member of Congress from Brooklyn during the Watergate impeachment inquiry, and a Judiciary Committee member at that time who voted for actual articles of impeachment. She also released a book last year called The Case for Impeaching Trump. Liz, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have any concerns about what state the country is going to be in once this is all over? Give us a call and leave us a voicemail, and you might get to hear your voice on the podcast. The number is 844-745-TALK. Just leave us a message. Again, it's 844-745-8255. We'll also take your general questions, thoughts, feelings, ideas, and anything else you want to share with us about what you're watching for in the impeachment inquiry. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon at WNYC.org.